occurs to me that you don't know.
Know what?
That I've found the right person already.
You mean Edith? I ask, my heart aching a little for him. He laughs, a little sadly.
No, not Edith.
You, B.
I struggle to catch my breath, bowled over by this declaration.
But I thought...
I begin, but don't know how to finish.
I...
Simon chuckles. It's not often you're tongue-tied.
No,
I say, laughing too. Edith ended the relationship because she knew, in her heart, that I love you.
Oh, God, sigh. That's awful,
I say, trying to imagine how that must feel.
I'm so sorry, for both of you.
And then, glancing over, looking at Simon so strong and dependable, taking me home, I'm filled with a desire to reach out and wrap my arms around him, to bury my face in his brushed cotton shirt.
Can we pull over?
Of course, he says, indicating for the next exit, looking over at me a little anxiously. We stop at a service station. What's wrong, B? Are you hungry? I take off my seatbelt and reach over.
I just wanted to hug you.
Well, that's allowed, he says, a little bashfully, wrapping his arms around me.
What's brought this on?
A thought of Leo pops into my head, passionate and good-looking, but torn between Brit and me. But Simon isn't torn. In all the time we were together, he's never been anything other than 100% true. It just feels good to know you're on my side.
I'm always on your side, B, he says, looking deep into my eyes.
And before I know it, we're kissing. And though it's completely unexpected, it's also familiar and comfortable and far more secure than the perilous passion I felt with Leo.
I'll call you,
says Simon, leaning in for a kiss after he's pulled over on Chiswick High Street.
Good luck.
I'll need it,
I say, wishing I'd had time to nip home and change out of my festival clothes. I'm not sure a denim pinafore dress and gypsy blouse shouts professional.
You'll be terrific.
As I watch him roar off, I can't help wishing Simon would come back and hold my hand to take care of the corporate speak that I've never got to grips with in all the time I've worked for Sir Hugo. I take a deep breath before entering the head office, which is shiny and new and makes me feel ultra shabby. I have an appointment with Hilary Bentham, I tell the perfectly turned-out receptionist. Her nails have an immaculate French manicure. Mine have bits of mud ingrained in them. My name's B. Henshaw.
Take a seat, she says, picking up the telephone.
I've pulled out a pocket mirror and am tweaking my hair when it occurs to me that this is my one opportunity to realize my dream. But there's no point in wasting energy on worrying about the wrong clothes or nails or hair. The only thing that matters is selling my product, and me, to Hilary. Live life now, I whisper to myself, snapping my mirror shut, just as Abigail arrives in reception.
Hi, B, she says, smiling warmly, paying no attention to my disheveled state. Come on up.
Take strength from Lizzie, I tell myself as we ascend in the lift, trying not to focus on the contrast between Abigail's professional attire and mine. She fought for her and her child's lives. The least you can do is fight for your dream.
Hilary's really excited to hear more about your designs. Everyone who's seen the images has loved them.
Abigail shows me into Hilary's office, which is ridiculously large and bright.
B, how are you?
She extends her hand to mine, shaking it firmly.
I'm okay. Straight back from the festival, as you can see. Perfect. Your style really captures the zest that we're always looking for. Come in and tell me all about your work.
I spend a few minutes explaining about my passion for jewelry that I've had since I was a child, my time at art school, my detour into becoming a PA, and the events that led me back to design again.
And the Native American influence?
Asks Hilary. My great aunt brought back a bracelet from Arizona when I was small, which I treasure to this day.
It's something I've always had an interest in, but hadn't found the right moment to explore.
And that exploration is really important, she says, sucking on the end of a leg of her glasses. I'm wondering if it might be worth exploring that a little further. Taking a trip to the States, maybe. Seeing if you can push the designs past great and into something more extraordinary.
Okay, I say, trying to rein in my disappointment that she's not biting here and now, and wondering how I'll ever afford the travel.
It's not a no, it's a very definite maybe, she says, picking up on my disappointment. I just want to see the designs develop a little more before committing. Let's arrange to meet again before Christmas. Bring your sketches, some new products if you have them, and we'll make a decision then.
Okay, I'll do that, I say, trying not to doubt myself, resigned to the fact that the dream, to hand in my notice and design full-time, will have to continue to wait.
Chapter 27
come in, says Tom, waving me into the flat 4 days later. Your aunt is desperate to see you.
I'm desperate to see her, I say, going into the living room, which has had some subtle changes made since Tom's arrival. Gone are some of the more subjective pieces of artwork, and in are pictures of Tom's grandchildren and, pride of place on the record player cabinet, is Tom and Jane's wedding photo.
Jane! Tom calls. Bee's here!
Oh, thank heavens, says Aunt Jane, coming out of the kitchen, a gin and tonic in hand.
You can't know how much I've been worrying about all of you these last few days.
She hands me the drink and indicates for me to sit down on the sofa, where she parks herself beside me.
How is Lizzie?
She's home, I say, clutching her hand, trying to reassure her. Aunt Jane looks to Tom, her eyes overflowing with relief.
Thank God.
He strokes her hair and sits in beside her, his arm round her back.
And the baby?
Unaffected. Tom gives her a squeeze.
That's the very best news, he says.
She's taking a week off work just to rest, but after that, everything should be back to normal.
She's always been strong, says Aunt Jane.
It's the farmer's blood that does it.
I laugh. I'm not sure she'd thank you for that, but yes, for someone so small, she is particularly steely.
Any news about Cat and the good-looking Frenchman?
Aunt Jane's eyes twinkle mischievously, and Tom chuckles.
If there is, she's keeping tight-lipped about it.
I think her heart's still with Henry, though I've no idea why.
And Leo?
Gone back to California, to figure out what he wants out of life. Aunt Jane gives my back a supportive rub.
And how was your meeting with Whimsy and White?
I knock back a swig of G&T before telling her about Hillary's plan.
What's wrong with that? She asks, sensing my frustration.
It just feels as if the dream is always out of reach. I don't really have the time or the money to take a trip before Christmas. It's hard to see how I'm going to conjure up something extraordinary by then.
That's not the fighting spirit, Bee.
Probably not. And Simon did say he'd be happy to help, but I don't know. It doesn't feel right.
Simon?
She asks, sitting erect. Sensing an impending battle, Tom excuses himself, and Aunt Jane and I distance ourselves from each other on the sofa. I pause, hesitant to tell her about Simon and me, knowing exactly what she'll have to say about it.
Should I gather from your reticence that you're back together?
I nod, sheepishly. The day after the meeting, and over one of our Thursday night suppers, Simon and I agreed to give things another go.
Why?
She asks, sharply. I feel safe with him. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it's been a pretty rocky summer. A bit of security isn't such a bad thing. Aunt Jane scoffs derisorily. I should be mad at her, but I can't. Because the truth is, I know what her reservations are. Those same feelings have been niggling away at me over the past few days. He's really trying to support me, I say, a bit too eagerly, no doubt signalling even more clearly to Aunt Jane that I'm concealing my real feelings.
He doesn't really get my creative side, but he's trying to.
Offering to pay for me to take the trip is incredibly generous of him.
Aunt Jane gets up, whisking away my glass.
Are you back with him out of love or because there's a free ticket on the table?
That's a bit harsh.
Only because you know there's an underlying truth to it.
I haven't agreed to marry him, I say, aware that my vitriol isn't helpful. We're just seeing how things go.
Well, thank God for small mercies, she says, turning on her heels and disappearing into the kitchen.
Chapter 28.
These cuff bracelets are insane, says Lizzie, picking up one of the pieces from my new workstation in the living room.
When Jessica moved in at the weekend, we rearranged the room together, using the end with the window for my studio space and the opposite end as our snug. It works surprisingly well.
Insane good or insane bad? I ask, placing a huge bowl of popcorn on the coffee table.
Insane amazing, she says, trying one on.
And I must admit, it looks good on her. For someone who was in intensive care 2 weeks ago, she looks the picture of health. It's too early for her bump to be showing, but she's got a glow about her that can't go unnoticed, even after being so poorly.
The inspiration came from something a customer said at the festival.
I wasn't sure if I'd gone too wide.
Not at all. They're proper statement pieces, like beaded wrist warmers.
That's what I was going for, I say, relieved that someone gets it.
It's cool, Bea, properly different. I bet Hillary will love them.
It's nice to hear Lizzie's enthusiasm because since my meeting with Hillary, I've been a bit up and down. After what happened to Lizzie, I know I've no real reason to complain. My life is pretty damn good. I'm working towards my dream. I have a job that pays the rent. I have a nice home and a great new flatmate. And I'm back with Simon. But some days I'm not that good at appreciating it. My dream of a nomadic, creative existence still feels just out of reach, and I can't figure out how to bring it closer, other than by plugging away at my design work and squirreling away towards a research trip to the States, because I don't feel fully comfortable accepting Simon's offer and, if I'm honest, I feel anxious about traveling on my own. Aunt Jane tells me to be patient, that all good things will come and all that, but some days it's harder than others.
I hope so, I say, trying not to doubt, trying to take each day step by step.
Anyway, how are you feeling? How was the 12-week scan?
The scan was incredible. Wait, I have a picture somewhere.
Lizzie disappears out to the hall, where I hear her muttering to herself about where she's put the photo, and I call the others through. Once Lizzie has eventually found it, the five of us huddle onto the sofa, Lizzie in the middle, the photograph in hand.
Here's Bean,
she says, holding out the image of the scan.
Oh my God, I squeal, looking at the tiny critter lying on its back with its feet pointing upwards.
I lean my head on Lizzie's shoulder.
I actually think I'm going to cry.
Babies have a way of doing that, says Jessica, marveling over the photo.
I love them so much, I almost trained as a nanny.
Am I missing something? Asks Kat, taking the picture and squinting at it. All I can make out is a grey mass.
Jessica leans in beside her, already part of the gang.
This is the head, body, and toes.
Huh?
Says Kat, continuing to stare.
Oh, yeah, I see it now.
And I swear I see her eyes mist over.
It's a miracle you kept the baby safe, Liz, says Hannah. You can't know how scared we were.
I do know. Lizzie leans her head against mine.
But I think, in some small way, we're all a bit stronger for it.
Have you and Jack figured out what to do yet? Asks Hannah, as we begin to find more comfortable spots on the sofa.
Not yet, but we will. Plenty of women have babies on their own, so I'll be fine. If nothing else, I'll have moral support on the end of the phone.
And we'll always be here to help out, I say.
Bagsy not doing the night shift, says Kat. Or nappies.
Just you wait until the baby comes, says Hannah, laughing.
You'll be the first to want to get stuck in.
Seriously doubt it.
Don't believe you, I say.
Don't really care, Mrs. Simon, she sings, and I throw a handful of popcorn at her. It's nice that you and Si are back together, says Lizzie. I didn't like to say at the time, but I kind of missed him being around. You guys are strong together.
Does it feel right, Bee? Hannah asks, knowing my previous doubts better than anyone else.
It's fine, I say, my voice a little tight. Life pretty much continues as normal.
Thank Christ for that, says Kat. We've had enough bumps in the road this summer. It's good to have some sense of normality again.
So long as that's what Bee wants, says Hannah.
She's watching me carefully, probably sensing that the normality I craved when everything was up in the air with Lizzie isn't necessarily what I'm looking for now.
Of course it's what she wants, says Kat. And Leo's back in California, asks Lizzie.
Yep, I reply, nibbling my bottom lip.
And he hasn't been in touch?
Nope.
I figure he's settled down with Britt, planning a family.
Nice that you had a little summer romance, though.
Lizzie gives my wrist a shake and a squeeze.
No harm done.
Right, I say, nodding, hoping they don't hear the faint change of pitch in my voice.
No harm done.
Speaking of summer romances, says Hannah. Kat, have you heard from Sebastian? Remy tells me he's pretty keen.
I don't know what you mean, says Kat, shaking her head, the muscles in her neck tensing a little, the way they do when she's under strain.
Remy told me he wants to see you again. By all accounts, he's smitten.
Well, too bad, she says on an outward breath. She stretches her arms out in front of her, her fingers locked, as if she's about to do some intense exercise. But I can tell it's not exercise she's thinking about. It's something else. Something she knows we're going to find hard to swallow.
The wedding's back on. Henry and I are getting married.
Their news is greeted with a wall of stunned silence, until Jessica chimes in.
That's wonderful news, she says.
Our eyes flit between each other in shock.
When's the big day?
September the 8th, same as it was before.
Gosh, so soon. You must have a lot to organise.
Actually, no. I called the wedding coordinator, it's all taken care of. The only thing outstanding is the photographer.
Well, good for you. Jessica casts me a terse smile that says, say something, please.
What made you make your mind up?
I ask. I remember when she announced her engagement and I struggled to be pleased. And now, with a wedding being back on, me finding it even harder to be excited by the news.
She must think me such a rubbish friend, but all I want is for her to be happy.
It wasn't any one thing exactly, she says,
a little on the defensive.
But when Lizzie was sick, it got me to thinking about how fragile life can be, how we can lose everything in the blink of an eye and it's over. I don't want to lose Henry. He makes life difficult sometimes, it's true, and he does have a way of blowing things out of proportion, but I don't want to give up on us, not after all we've been through.
Sounds like a good enough reason to me, says Lizzie.
Does he know you slept with Sebastian? I ask.
She nods.
Funnily enough, I think it made the decision simpler for both of us. We're even, you know? It's easier to be forgiving when you've been in the same situation.
Sure, I say, not wanting to put a damper on things, even though being even doesn't sound like a good enough reason to me.
Also, I can't help thinking that confessing to sleeping with Sebastian wasn't such a great idea. But Kat's always been a believer in making a go of things and not making a fuss. So if that's what she wants, who am I to criticise?
To Kat and Henry, says Hannah, raising her glass. And to wedding number 4.
To wedding number 4,
we chorus, chinking each other's glasses, the feeling of excitement less than it should be.
You know what's rubbish?
Asks Lizzie, and I can tell she's about to say something inane.
What's that?
I ask.
The fact that you're back with Simon.
Why is that rubbish? Asks Hannah. I thought we just agreed that was a good thing.
Right. It is, of course it is, but it does mean we can't set B up with wedding date number 4. Damn that, Simon, says Kat, with sufficient good humour for me to know she's not completely mad at me for lacking enthusiasm about her wedding. But I have an idea. My eyes wander towards Jessica.
Such a good idea, says Lizzie, immediately picking up on my thinking.
What? Asks Hannah.
Jessica is single, I explain, and I reckon I know just the person to set her up with at Kat's wedding.
But I'm not invited, she says.
You are now, says Kat, holding out her hand for Jessica to shake. And I'm telling you, with these girls' track record, you may just live to regret it.
Catherine and Henry. Catherine and Henry invite you to their wedding at St. Mary's Church, and for their wedding breakfast at the Westway Hotel, Acton. Saturday, 8th September. Chapter 29. There's something about the urban church setting and the 8 of us all huddled on and around the bench in the graveyard that makes me feel as if I've been propelled into the scene before Charles's wedding. Except I guess if my life was following the same course as Charles's, it would be me getting married, not Kat. But there is the similarity of her marrying someone I'm not that sure about, in the same way Charles decided to marry Duckface, much to Fiona's despair. Though I can't pretend despair is what I'm feeling. Just a mild disappointment that my best friend has chosen someone who doesn't seem to ignite much passion in her.
A church wedding at last, says Aunt Jane, pouring hot tea from a flask.
She looks spectacularly bright today in a jade-green kaftan dress and wide-brimmed straw hat. Yes, it does seem odd that we've come through so many weddings this summer without one, I say, brushing a crumb of pain au chocolat off the grey silk of my bridesmaid's dress.
I just can't believe we've made it to wedding number 4, says Lizzie, who's looking lovely in an empire-lined bridesmaid's dress with a black ribbon under her growing bust. She's really begun to throw herself into preparing for the baby. Not a day goes by where she isn't online looking for some piece of paraphernalia or other, reading about the birth or considering colour schemes for the nursery. She's like a woman possessed.
It's a dream come true, almost, she says,
glancing to where Simon and I are sitting propped up against a gravestone.
You've not to expect wedding number 5 any time soon, says Simon. Bees made me promise. No more proposals until next year at least.
Quite right, no need to rush, says Aunt Jane.
And I know exactly what she's thinking.
Don't do it at all.
But I've been thinking. Maybe a traditional marriage and life with Simon wouldn't be so bad. I wouldn't have to work, so I'd have plenty of time to concentrate on my jewellery and to travel. And I'm sure Simon would help me set up a little business. Still, it's not what Aunt Jane wants for me, despite having apologised for being so harsh.
4 weddings are definitely enough for one summer, says Hannah.
I don't know,
says Remy, balanced on the arm of the bench, next to Hannah in her grey silk maxi dress.
I have loved this summer and all the love we've shared. It would be good to have another.
How about Jessica and Dave? I say,
indicating to the church gates where the 2 of them are arriving, looking very sweet together for a couple who only met 10 days ago. I'm feeling quite proud of my matchmaking skills.
Don't try to dodge the topic of you and Simon, says Lizzie. We all want it to happen.
Simon's going to be far too busy to even think about a wedding, I say.
Why so?
Asks Tom, his arm around Aunt Jane, supping his tea.
He's taking over from Sir Hugo as CEO, I say, in a sort of proud spouse sort of way.
Which makes me feel at odds with myself, and the ideas I've been churning over.
Congratulations, says Hannah.
Very impressive,
says Aunt Jane, somewhat dry in her delivery.
Congrats, man.
Jack bumps fists with Simon, which makes Simon look ridiculously awkward and more old-fashioned than ever.
It's not that impressive, says Simon. My father's had enough. The stress of it all is making him tired and forgetful. I was always going to take over, it's just come a little earlier than planned.
But it's still a big deal, I say, trying to show my support,
even though I have serious reservations about Simon being CEO and how he'll be even more married to his work, not to mention my concerns about whether I'll have a job after Sir Hugo retires.
When does your tour start, Jack?
Asks Simon, deflecting the attention away from himself and us, which is a relief.
Next month, he says, pulling Lizzie a little closer.
You're leaving when your wife will be 5 months pregnant? Asks Aunt Jane, clearly horrified.
He's not leaving me. I'm going with him.
Lizzie's news leaves us all in suspended animation for a moment.
You're going on tour? Asks Hannah, once she's computed what Lizzie has said.
When was this decided?
Last week,
shrugs Lizzie, as if the idea of touring America on a cramped, smelly tour bus with a baby due in 4 months was the most normal thing in the world.
Have you completely lost your mind?
Lizzie's up for the adventure, says Jack, supportively. We're really excited.
But what if you go into labor when you're out there? Asks Hannah, still incredulous.
They do have hospitals in America, says Lizzie, with a laugh, and management is fine about paying the extra cost for insurance.
I think it's a brilliant idea, I say, happy to see Lizzie and Jack so tight again after their little hiccup. Now is definitely the time for taking a risk and daring to dream. When the kid is older, you won't be so free to move around as you are now.
Hear, hear, says Tom. Life is meant to be lived.
Absolutely, says Remy, raising her cup of tea, and we all join her, lifting our plastic cups to Lizzie and Jack.
Live life now, I say to Lizzie with a fond smile. Live life now, says everyone else. Jack leaning into Lizzie, the two of them sharing a kiss. As we're focused on Jack and Lizzie, a car pulls up outside the church, and Henry and his brother climb out, joking and slapping each other on the back. Henry looks as if he's still pissed from his stag do last night.
Gosh, is it that time already?
I say, getting up and wiping down my skirt of crumbs.
Time we got this show on the road.
Kat decided to go fairly minimal on the flowers, which felt like a mistake in such a large church. But by the time the guests have arrived, and the colour of their outfits and the murmur of their excitement is filling the space, it no longer looks so bare and uninviting.
Everything's in order, says Hannah,
having helped to seat the final elderly guest.
Now we just need the bride.
She'll be here, I say, waiting by the entrance, able to see both the church gate and where Henry is sitting at the front. He keeps glancing furtively in my direction.
Let's hope so.
Everyone knows Kat's not a great timekeeper. Hannah checks her watch.
She's already 10 minutes late.
Which is nothing for Kat, I say, trying to pull off jokey, but unable to hide a note of concern.
Should we call her?
Give her 5 more minutes, I say. Go tell Henry the car was delayed or something that helps him relax. He looks petrified. I pace the vestibule, out of sight of Henry, wondering where she might be.
Traffic could be bad, I tell myself. She could have a nervous tummy, or maybe she's just doing plain old-fashioned late.
But whatever I come up with, nothing abates the anxiety in my stomach that something is up. When her car eventually arrives outside the church, the congregation is beginning to get restless. The quiet, excited murmur having changed to louder, nervous chatter. Rather than signal to Lizzie and Hannah that she's arrived, I nip down to meet her, to check that she's okay.
What's going on?
I ask, after her parents have got out of the car and headed inside, looking frostier than anyone might expect parents of the bride to look.
Everything's fine.
She climbs out of the car, carrying off her wide-legged bridal jumpsuit in white silk as only Kat can.
Where's your bouquet?
Didn't bring it.
Why not?
She shoves a hand into a pocket of her jumpsuit and walks towards the entrance.
It felt too fussy.
Okay, I say, not wanting to make a thing of it, hurrying to keep up with her. In fairness, she does look stunning. The halter neck shows her sinewy arms to full effect, and the low V displays just enough of her toned stomach without being risque. If I had a body like Kat's, I wouldn't want to hide it behind a bunch of flowers either.
She's just about to go inside when we hear another car draw up, and we both turn to see Sebastian getting out of a taxi. I'm surprised to see he's been invited, and wonder if Henry knows. He jogs towards us, holding onto his top hat.
God, he says, panting slightly. I thought I was late.
Kat laughs, her face lighting up.
Bonne chance,
he says, briefly ducking in to kiss her on the cheek. Then he slows, admiring her.
You look incredible.
Kat blushes lightly.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Sebastian lingers for just a moment, the two of them holding eye contact.
It is time, no?
He says. Yes, she agrees, almost tentatively. He kisses her once more and heads in.
Are you ready?
I ask, once Sebastian is out of sight.
Guess so, she says,
which isn't quite the emphatic response I was looking for. She's about to step inside the church when I reach out and grab her by the wrist. Wait.
What?
She asks, her voice catching just a little. Kat, I've known you since we were 4 years old. I know when something's not right. What's going on? Tell me. She shakes her wrist free of my hand, her eyes narrowed.
It's nothing, come on. I'm late enough.
Before I have the chance to say anything more, the organist has begun to play, and Lizzie and Hannah are processing down the aisle in front of Kat, me following on behind. I admire my friend walking down the aisle alone, a modern woman in her statement dress, not wanting the fuss of flowers or her father's arm. I wonder when the moment will come in my life where I have that much inner confidence.
Why the delay? Whispers Aunt Jane, when Kat has reached the front and I've taken my seat.
I don't know,
I say, glancing towards where Sebastian is seated. But intuition tells me something isn't right.
Welcome to St. Mary's on this glorious day, says the vicar, my mind wandering as she offers her thoughts on God's will for marriage.
At this point during Lizzie's wedding, I remember her and Jack being utterly transfixed on each other. The same was true of Aunt Jane and Tom, and Hannah was busy proclaiming her undivided love for Remy. It worries me that Kat has barely glanced at Henry since arriving at his side, seemingly more interested in the tiles on the floor than in her husband-to-be.
Let us turn to the order of service and sing All Things Bright and Beautiful.
As the organist opens with the first four bars, Aunt Jane stage whispers,
Not the most original of hymns.
Kat hasn't been invested in the detail. It's all a bit of a formality. Aunt Jane locks on to Kat's outfit.
That's clear to see.
I nudge her disapprovingly. I love the jumpsuit. She looks beautiful. Proof that beauty is definitely in the eye of the beholder. I shake my head and sing along to the rest of the hymn, watching Kat and Henry, standing shoulder by shoulder but still managing to look a mile apart.
We come now to the part of the ceremony where I must ask if anyone knows of any lawful impediment as to why these two people may not be joined in matrimony, says the vicar.
I'm so busy watching Kat and Henry that it escapes my attention that Aunt Jane has reached into her handbag and pulled out a gavel, which she is now banging on the pew.
Gasps of shock fill the church. The vicar scans the congregation to see where the sound is coming from,
and Kat and Henry both turn to face their families and friends. Before I can stop her, Aunt Jane has her hand in the air, waving at the vicar.
Do you have something you'd like to say? The vicar asks Aunt Jane.
Kat glares at me furiously. I shake my head wildly, trying to tell her that this is all Jane. I haven't put her up to this.
I don't believe the bride wishes to marry this man, says Aunt Jane,
bold as brass.
Aunt Jane,
I hiss, the eyes of every member of the congregation on us.
And what makes you believe that?
Asks the vicar, who is shaking like a leaf. It's hard to imagine that she's dealt with something like this before. And that's when it happens. Our very own four weddings moment, when Aunt Jane says,
because I suspect the bride doesn't love the groom.
Is this true, Cat? Asks the vicar. For a moment, I think she's going to say, Of course I do, don't be so ridiculous. But she doesn't. Instead, she looks, not at Henry, but straight at Sebastian, whom Henry clocks for the first time and says, I think she might be right. After that, the script alters, and the moment where everything feels frozen in time rapidly accelerates. And suddenly Henry is running down the aisle, grabbing hold of Sebastian's lapels with his fist held back. Then he hits him. Hard. So hard that the next thing I know, Sebastian is lying flat on his back, passed out on the floor.
Chapter 30
Jesus, Henry!
Yells Cat, the vicar flinching. Cat races towards them, immediately crouching next to Sebastian's head.
What's the matter with you?
She shouts at Henry.
What's the matter with me?
Henry shouts back, his voice ricocheting off the rafters.
You're the one who slept with him.
Oh, Cat, didn't I say telling Henry about Seb was a bad idea?
While we were on a break,
she spits, getting up. Cat's poor mother sinks into her pew in despair.
At least I haven't hidden anything from you.
Meaning?
Meaning, how many times did you sleep with Lucille?
Henry flounders, unable to come up with an answer. Cat releases a sigh of contempt.
So it was more than once,
she says, more quietly now, resigned to her fate. I figured as much when you sent me a message last night that was clearly intended for her.
No, I...
Henry burbles, trying helplessly to fudge a way out. But he can't. The truth is out at last, and there's no taking it back, particularly in a house of God.
I can't believe I didn't realize sooner. I can't believe I was prepared to forgive you for a one-night stand when you've been cheating for...
She stops, unable to finish.
For how long?
He looks at his shoes, aware, no doubt, that the entire congregation is now looking at him, each one of them waiting for his answer. It's not important, he mutters.
It bloody well is important, I blurt.
Aunt Jane takes hold of my wrist, tightly, urging me to control myself. Which seems weird, given what she's just done. Simon places a placating hand on my shoulder, which I shake off. Cat stares at Henry, her brow raised, waiting for an answer. Almost a year, he says, and a quiet groan of, there's no coming back from that, reverberates round the church.
Fine,
says Cat, standing up, unyielding in her stance.
Let's chalk this up as a near miss, shall we?
You get on with your life, I'll get on with mine.
Come on, Kit, we can...
No, I don't want to hear it. I'm done. Let's call it quits while we still have an ounce of respect left for each other.
She's quite right,
says Aunt Jane, her voice cutting over the melee.
Better to walk away while you still like each other. I'm not sure we need your opinion, says Henry, scathing in his delivery.
Aunt Jane shrugs.
Well, whether you like it or not, young man, I'm offering it. Best you run along before all this shock turns to anger and you find yourself lynched.
She's right, says Cat, when Henry turns to her for backup. It's best you go. Henry's about to put up a fight when his brother steps in to guide him away. Let's go, he says, leading Henry down the aisle, past friends and family members who no longer know quite where to look. With Henry gone, I go to Cat, trying to put an arm around her. But she's so full of fiery indignation that I quickly let go. She squats down beside Seb, who was beginning to groan on the floor.
I'm sorry,
he whispers, raising a hand to his face to assess the damage.
Don't be. You and Aunt Jane did me the biggest favor of my life.
Slowly, Seb sits up, clutching his jaw.
Let me take you away from here.
No, I have to stay, pick up the pieces.
She glances towards her parents and Henry's, who are huddled together, no doubt trying to figure out what to do next. "That's what we're here for," I say, Hannah and Lizzie joining me on either side, our arms wrapped around each other. "You go with Sebastian. We'll take care of the rest."
"Are you sure?"
Kat asks, helping Seb up. "Of course," I say. "Leave it to us."
"I expect the reception will feel more like a wake," says Hannah when we're finishing up at the church and the congregation has left.
Kat's choice of a one-stop-shop wedding venue proved pretty useful in the end. A single call to Sue and everything was taken care of. Kat and Henry's parents decided it wasn't good form to send their guests back home without feeding them, so a few stragglers have wound their way over to the hotel for a non-wedding breakfast. "It's a good place for a more somber occasion," I say, ambling outside, uncertain what to do next. As bridesmaid, I should probably be at the reception, but something tells me nobody's going to be too concerned about customs and protocols considering what's just happened.
"I can safely say that I didn't see any of that coming," says Simon, as we park ourselves on and around the same bench as earlier.
"I can't figure out who to feel most sorry for," says Jack.
"What do you mean?" asks Lizzie, outraged by his comment. "Henry doesn't deserve any sympathy. He's a barefaced lying shit."
"Steady, Liz," I say,
all of us astonished by her language.
"Well, it's true."
Baby hormones have certainly made her less shy about speaking her mind, that's for certain. "Kat knew about the girl at work, and Henry knew about Sebastian," I say. "Henry cheated on Kat and only confessed when she confronted him about the rumor. And he lied through his teeth about how long it went on. Kat didn't cheat on Henry. They were separated."
"She has a point, B," says Hannah.
"Still," says Jack,
"he really did want to marry Kat."
"How can you be so sure?"
asks Lizzie, still incredulous at her husband.
"He's proven himself a liar."
"I know the guy," says Jack. "And yes, he's kind of proud and a bit of a misogynist, but underneath it all, I really believe he loves Kat."
"Well, he's got a fucking funny way of showing it," says Lizzie.
"I agree with Jack," says Simon.
"What do you mean?" I ask, bewildered by this outpouring of misplaced male sympathy.
"I think he does love Kat, and I also think it's incredibly bad form to jilt someone at the altar."
"You can't take someone's side based on what Debrett's might have to say about it," I say, irritated by his stuffiness.
How much more insufferable will he be when he's the CEO of his father's family business?
"You can all blame me," says Aunt Jane. "I acted on instinct, and I always say, instincts get you into trouble."
"No one should be blaming anyone," I say. "If Kat hadn't found out today, she would have found out after they were married. Better to call it off now than to go through an expensive divorce."
"Better the parents pick up today's bill than Kat and Henry pay for the dissolution," quips Hannah, causing a nervous ripple of laughter.
"I feel bad that my four-wedding scheme has brought all of this about," says Lizzie. "It caused you and Simon to break up too. I should have kept my mouth shut."
"Rubbish. Kat was engaged before you mentioned the idea. Henry's behaviour was always going to come out in the wash. And as for Simon and me, I needed some time to figure out what I wanted. It's all worked out for the best, I think."
"And besides," says Aunt Jane, "I wouldn't rule out another wedding one day. I'm convinced Kat and Sebastian are right for each other."
"Or maybe," says Hannah, looking towards the church gates.
"Is that who I think it is?"
asks Lizzie, squinting against the sunlight.
"Who is that?"
asks Simon.
"It's Leo," I say, reining in my excitement, because what I really want to do is to scream, really yell out my delight. But instead, I stop myself, not only from screaming, but also from rushing towards him and wrapping myself around him, just as Scarlett did when Chester rocked up unannounced to Charles's wedding. It takes every inch of my self-restraint to control myself. Hi, I say, getting up off the grass to greet him, my heart feeling as if it's trying to break through my ribs.
B, he says, his arms outreached, ready to meet me with a generous hug.
My slightly stiff body language, feeling Simon watching me from behind, tells him it's not the right time, and he kisses me awkwardly on the cheek instead.
Did I make it in time?
He asks, glancing over my shoulder at the small gathering on the bench, a church door closed behind them with no sign of the bride or groom.
Things didn't go exactly to plan, says Hannah. How come?
Aunt Jane's gavel got Henry in trouble, says Lizzie,
who's got up to give him a hug. Leo squints, none the wiser. Kat found out at the altar that Henry's been cheating on her for a long time, and Henry found out that Kat has feelings for Sebastian, I explain.
The French guy?
Exactly.
I thought he was your date. Simon clears his throat. I think you'll find that's me, he says,
eyeing Leo suspiciously from his place on the ground.
Simon, this is Leo.
Leo Simon. Simon gets up and stands territorially beside me.
How do you do?
He says, slightly overblown in his delivery.
Nice to meet you,
Leo replies, not making the connection about who Simon is. Mind if I grab a quiet word with B?
Not at all, Simon replies,
even though it's patently obvious that he does. Leo takes me to a corner of the graveyard, a safe distance from the others.
How are you?
He asks, taking hold of my hands. He looks at me as if he's just found water after days in the desert, a sense of relief, or release, pouring out of him.
I'm a bit shell-shocked, if I'm honest. Kat jilting Henry, and now you turning up out of the blue. It's all a bit much. I didn't realize Kat had invited you.
She didn't.
Then why are you here?
He squeezes my hands a little tighter.
I ended things with Brit.
Wow, I say, staggered by the news. That's big.
She realized in the end that she was clinging to the past. She knows it's for the best, even if it is hard.
He brushes his hand lightly around my face, drinking in every detail of it. You told me to figure out what my heart wanted, and I did. It wants you. I nod slowly, mesmerized by every inch of him. My heart wanting to burst with delight, but my head tempering it.
And I was kind of hoping you might want the same, he says, when I failed to say anything.
Wow.
I sit down on the grass before my legs give out beneath me.
You said that,
he says, with a laugh, joining me on the ground.
Right. Yes, I guess I did.
I bite my lip and glance towards my friends. And Simon, in particular. Leo follows my line of sight.
Is there something I don't know?
I exhale long and slow, then tell him.
Do you remember I told you about turning down a proposal?
Sure.
I indicate towards Simon.
That's the proposal guy?
He asks, a hint of disbelief in his voice. I try to see Simon, all stiff and British and upper class, through Leo's eyes. And how odd it must seem to him, the two of us together. I hesitate before answering, and when I do, I'm surprised just how loaded my voice is with regret.
Yes.
Then slowly he says,
You're back together, aren't you?
I wince. Our timing isn't great, is it? I say, hoping to sound light. When really I feel totally weighed down.
You can say that again.
We sit quietly for a moment, both uncertain what to say. Every possible scenario and outcome I can imagine bombarding my mind.
There is one other thing I wanted to tell you,
he says.
What's that?
I ask, not sure if I can handle another bombshell.
I got my first tour.
His eyes can't conceal his delight.
You did?
With Carburetor,
Their management asked me to do the U.S. tour with them.
Oh, that's amazing, Leo. Congratulations. You know Lizzie is going along.
Right. I did hear that, and I was thinking...
He pauses, his eyes flitting over mine.
Would you like to come too?
It takes a moment for the question to sink in, and then, once it has, my mind fills up with thoughts of Hilary Bentham and her wanting me to travel to develop my collection, and suddenly there seems to be creative potential everywhere and freedom and, most important of all, someone who's passionate about me and who I'm passionate about in return. But then Simon's laugh filters over from where they're sitting, and I'm reminded that I've responsibilities here. Simon, my job, Aunt Jane, Kat, even Jessica. And I know I can't do it, even if I might be beginning to believe in the one. Leo must see the decision in my eyes, because before I can respond, he chuckles wryly and gets up. Guess it's been a wasted trip then. I guess, I say, standing. I've always been a believer in things happening at the right time. Maybe now this isn't our time.
Maybe not, he says,
his head low, his eyes raised hopefully towards me. I place a hand lightly on his shoulder and kiss his cheek. Goodbye, Leo.
Goodbye, Bee,
he replies, his voice breaking. As he turns to go, Aunt Jane gets up, meeting me in the middle of the graveyard.
What's happening?
She asks, watching Leo heading off. He broke up with his girlfriend.
So why is he leaving?
I told him I'm with Simon.
Why?
Because I am. And besides, Leo's going off on tour. I can't just drop all my responsibilities to be with him on a whim.
Responsibilities?
She questions. Sure, I've Simon, work, and you. Kat's going to need my support, and I've Jessica to think about too. Aunt Jane eyes me as if I've lost my marbles.
Firstly, I have Tom. I am not your responsibility. Secondly, you don't care about your job. It's not what you want. And with Sir Hugo retiring, it's on the line anyway. I'm not even going to waste my time on Kat because, as is patently evident after today, she's perfectly capable of looking after herself. And as for Jessica...
She dispels the thought with a wave of the hand, but as she does, I remember Jessica saying how much she loved babies. And then Eva with baby Whitney popped into my mind. Could they be the perfect flatmates? If Eva hasn't found a place already.
And Simon? Really?
She looks at me in a lovingly aggressive way.
Beatrice, don't settle. You didn't want Kat to do so, so why would you do it yourself? You've just watched your best friend make the right decision at the very hardest time. Don't let that go to waste.
What do you mean?
I mean, if Kat can let go of Henry at the altar, you can certainly let go of Simon now, before you really break his heart. Harness Kat's inner strength.
I'm loath to admit it, but I know she has a point. And something, a feeling I can't identify, begins to swell inside of me.
Is your loyalty to Simon and his secure, sensible ways really worth letting go of the one person you have a real connection with? The one person you're wholeheartedly in love with?
I'm not certain, I say, my head beginning to pound. The only thing I know for sure is that I want to focus on my career, just like you did.
But you have the choice to have both, Bee.
I didn't.
You can have your career and your man, and he'll only help develop your work. All that traveling, new inspiration. Will Simon do that for you?
Simon would be able to help in other ways, even if he wouldn't be able to come with me.
And is traveling alone something you want? Wouldn't you rather travel with someone you're crazy about? Someone you could have great adventures with? Someone who inspires you?
I don't reply, because that feeling, an energy, is beginning to burst through me, like a butterfly breaking free of its cocoon.
I can't tell you what to do, Beatrice, but I can reiterate some advice. The heart wants what it wants. Don't be afraid of that, regardless of timing.
And Leo's heart wants me.
Do Didn't you tell Lizzie? Now is the time to take risks, to dare to dream.
I nod. Aunt Jane reaches out and takes my hand.
You must heed your own advice, Bea. And for what it's worth, I believe the wand does exist. Surely Tom and I are evidence of that. Don't do what I did. Don't let him go. If you do, you run the risk of missing many years of happiness. It's then that the feeling takes over, and my thoughts are crystal clear. I've been hanging on to the familiar, the comfortable, too afraid of making the same mistake as my mother to follow my heart. And before Aunt Jane can say anything else, I'm running out of the graveyard and calling after Leo.
Leo! I shout, looking up and down the road. Unable to see him, I impulsively decide on the direction of the tube station.
Run, girl! Aunt Jane calls from the church gate, causing me to smile gleefully, the wind on my face, literally racing to catch my dream.
Excuse me, I say, already breathless. Charles running after Carrie along the south bank, ready to declare his love to her, flashes into my mind.
Coming through!
I'm not oblivious to the odd looks I'm getting, but I don't care. All I care about is finding Leo and telling him, yes, let's give things a go. Live life now. By the time I get to the tube, I'm out of breath. I have a stitch in my side and there's no sign of Leo anywhere.
You all right, love?
Asks the station attendant. I shake my head, unable to speak, a rising sensation in my throat that makes me think I might vomit.
I was just looking for someone, I eventually manage to say, turning in circles to find him. But I guess it's not meant to be.
What's not meant to be? At first, I think it's the underground bloke again. My vision blurred from turning. But when I settle, and my sight becomes clearer, I see exactly who it is. It's Leo.
Leo,
I say, almost faint with relief, or perhaps just shortness of breath.
Are you okay?
He asks. I smile through my rapid breathing.
I will be. Just give me a minute.
Were you looking for me?
He asks, once my breath has returned to normal. Gazing deep into his eyes, I find myself saying,
I think I've been looking for you all my life.
And I pray it doesn't sound as chronically cheesy as Andy McDowell saying, Is it raining? I hadn't noticed. He raises his hand to my cheek and rubs it tenderly, staring intently into my eyes.
For the first time in my life, I realize I totally and utterly love one person. And it isn't Britt.
Is it the person standing opposite you now, not in the pouring rain? I ask, half laughing, half crying.
The truth is, Bea, he says, I think I've loved you from the first second we met.
Does he realize he's just quoted Charles to me?
And are you?
So will you come with me on tour? Travel for a bit, spend some time together, be a bit spontaneous, like we both want to be? Nothing and no one standing in our way?
I will, I say, smiling broadly, having my very own Andy McDowell I do moment. It's more impulsive than I would usually be, committing to Leo before I've broken the news to Simon or handed in my notice. But there's something about Leo that makes me want to throw caution to the wind and live the life I'm capable of.
But promise me one thing.
What?
No proposals. No talk of a wedding. Just you and me, without ties.
Deal, he says, bending down until his lips are just fluttering against mine. Because, in the words of David Cassidy, and then he's kissing me, in a way that makes me never want to come up for air. And I know, at last, whether the timing is right or not, that I've definitely found the one.
You have been listening to an Orion Publishing audiobook. To find out more about Orion's audiobooks, please go to the website at orionbooks.co.uk.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.